John chapter 6, we see a great account taking place here. The feeding of the 5,000. Now, this was the only miracle that is recorded in each of the four Gospels. We know that Matthew, Mark, and Luke went on through their books and they told a lot of various things that Jesus did, a lot of signs that he had done, a lot of miracles that the Lord had performed. And we see that this is the only miracle that is recorded in each of the four Gospels. So we see that it is a very significant and important event. And it is one that we're going to be looking at this morning. Now John, as we know, was writing to show Jesus as the Son of God. And he says in verse 31 of chapter 20, "But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in His name." So John was very exclusive in the things that he was writing about. He was only writing that which would bring his readers along to that conclusion that Jesus was the Son of God, and that by believing in His name you might have life in His name. And so John was writing only certain things that would give people that direction in their lives, that Jesus was the Son of God. There's many things that are recorded, or many things that Jesus and his disciples did in ministry, but yet John does not write anything down about them. Because it obviously it did not fulfill his overall purpose in writing that book. Now, though in John, we're at chapter 6, we're only a few chapters into this book of 21 chapters, there are a lot of things that have been done in Jesus' life already that we haven't read about here in the book of John. A lot of things that him and his disciples have been going out and doing and ministering to people. Many miracles that have already taken place, but yet John is not recording any of those. And though we're only in chapter 6, there is a great deal in Jesus' life that has already taken place that we don't see written about in the book of John here. He's been very active, though, in ministering along with his disciples. Now, as we get into this story here, it's been a very high point in Jesus' ministry and in the ministry of the disciples. This is getting to, you know, a real high point, the upper echelon here of ministry. They've been excited about what they've been doing. And there's a lot that's been happening. Now let's look at John or Mark chapter 6. Actually, let me start reading here. And we're going to compare Mark chapter 6 a bit today here. It says in John chapter 6 verse 1 here, "After these things, Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. Then a great multitude followed him, because they saw his signs which he performed on those who were diseased. And Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. Now the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was near. Then Jesus lifted up his eyes, and seeing a great multitude coming toward him, he said to Philip, 'Where shall we buy bread that these may eat?'" Now let's flip over to Mark chapter 6. And this account is picked up in verse 30 of chapter 6. Now just before this, Mark gives the account of how John the Baptist was beheaded. And as John was out of the picture, Jesus' ministry really began to take off. And we see here in verse 30, "Then the apostles gathered to Jesus and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught." So his disciples were going out and being active in the ministry. They were going about what the Lord had commanded them to do. And Jesus had went and sent them off earlier in chapter 6 of Mark here. Sent them off to go and minister. And they were doing a great work. And the disciples were excited and they were happy. Then it says in verse 31, "And he said to them, 'Come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while, for there were many coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat.' So they departed to a deserted place in a boat by themselves." Now it's interesting here, because as I said, it's been a very high point in the ministry of Jesus and his disciples. They've been active in teaching, in healing, in doing a great work in the name of Jesus. And the crowds, you see, they were swarming about them, weren't they? The crowds were getting excited. Wow, look at the things that we're seeing. And they were being excited, and they were swarming around Jesus and the disciples. So what does Jesus say? He tells his disciples there in Mark, let's get away for some rest. Let's just take time and get away. And so Jesus tells them where to go. And we see in John chapter 6 here that they went across the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. They went across to get away. And it's important to recognize that in this life, the things of this life and the routines that we find ourselves in can very much at times wear us down, can't they? We're going about our job, 9 to 5, 8 to 6, 7 to 7, who knows how long you work, but many people can find themselves in the routine of life, and the things of this life, the work that we're involved in, the things that we're doing, can begin to kind of wear you down. And what does Jesus say? He says, listen, let's get away for a bit. And you know what? That is a very good thing for us to do in our lives, is to get away with the Lord. Take time each day where we can just get away with Jesus and allow Him to refresh us. Allow Him just to speak into our lives, to nourish us. And He will do that. But it's important that we take time to do that. Because many times people find themselves just going and going and going. And they find themselves being burnt out, being tired, being discouraged. Because they don't take time to just spend with the Lord. And Jesus recognized the importance of that. He saw His disciples. They were probably sitting there going, you know, this is fun and all, but this is tiring stuff. Whew. And Jesus says, listen, let's get away here. It's important that we do that. If we don't make this a habit, what's going to happen is that we're going to, in a sense, just begin to come apart at the seams. We're going to be flustered. We're going to be cranky. We're going to be tired. But Jesus would desire that we come to Him, that He can strengthen us, that He can speak into our hearts, that He can refresh us. And that is what we'll see happen. And Jesus did that with His disciples here, sent them away to a deserted place that they can rest a while and spend time together. Now, the crowds, it says, went and followed them. They went across the Sea of Tiberias, Sea of Galilee. And it's believed it was probably about a 6-mile trek along there. But the crowd saw them going off and they knew where they were going. And so the crowds, what did they do? They went and ran around the Sea of Galilee. And ended up meeting them at the place where they had set sail, or where they had docked their boat. And it's believed as possibly around a 9-mile hike going around that lake to where the disciples were landing. Now, these crowds came and they were attracted to the things that Jesus was doing. No doubt about it. They were coming, they ran all this way. But what attracted these people to truly come 9 miles and meet up with the Lord and the disciples there? Well, no doubt the life of Jesus and the things that He was doing was very, very attractive. But you see, these crowds, they were following Jesus for the wrong reasons. What were the crowds interested in? They were interested in the signs that Jesus was doing, in the miracles. Oh, look at what this person is doing. That's incredible. Let's go and maybe we can be touched. Let's just go over there. Let's abandon everything and run over there. 9 miles, I don't care how long it is. Let's get over there and maybe we can benefit by the things that Jesus is doing. And you know, it's sad because so many times people, even today, are interested in only coming to Jesus because of how He might benefit them. How He might touch their lives. And true, the Lord wants to do that. And true, we can direct people to Him because He will help them and change their lives and touch them. And that's good. But many people are seeking Him only for that reason. And not saying, Lord, I just love You for who You are. And I just want to come and serve You. I just want to come and be with You. You see, that's the attitude that we need to have. Yet people are just coming and saying, oh, if I turn to the Lord now, maybe He will give me that new car that I've been wanting. Whoa. Maybe he will bless me with that house that I've been wanting to buy. Wow, wouldn't that be nice? And people turn to the Lord simply for the reasons of how he might benefit them. And that goes on today. But I pray that we would come to Jesus always, not just when we are in need, but just to come and lay down our lives before him. Come to him simply to thank him and to praise him because of his goodness to us. That is abounding always, his goodness to us. He's faithful, isn't he? And I pray that we would just come and have that attitude, laying down our lives before him. So the crowds came. They were excited because he was healing their sick and diseased. And they're thinking, oh, maybe the Lord will do a work in my life. And Jesus went up on the mountain in John here, chapter 6. Went up on the mountain and there he sat with his disciples. Now the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was near. Now, remember, the Passover feast is one of those three major feasts that that all Jewish males would have to go down to and celebrate in the city of Jerusalem. They were required to go down there and take part in this festival. And so it's possible that the crowds were even greater than they normally would have been because of the Galilean Jews who were making their pilgrimage down to Jerusalem at this time. The crowds could have been even greater because of the time that it was. The Passover feast was near. And so people from the north there were coming together and they were beginning to make their way down to Jerusalem. So, many people were there. And it says in verse 5, then Jesus lifted up his eyes and seeing a great multitude coming toward him, said to Philip. Now, in Mark chapter 6, don't need to turn there, but this is what it says there when Jesus saw the crowd. It says in Mark 6 verse 34 that he was moved with compassion for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began to teach them many things. You know, isn't the heart of our Lord just so wonderful that he looked and had compassion on them? Here was Jesus trying to get away with his disciples just to have them be refreshed, take some time just to rest and relax. But the crowds came. You know, they could have been very tired. And instead of Jesus looking at this crowd saying, oh my goodness, look at the people coming. They're coming in swarms. It's like a huge army coming. Peter, John, James, listen, go and find a cave. Let's find something we can hide out in. We got to just escape. We got to get out of here. No. Jesus looked and he was moved with compassion. He was filled with compassion of the crowds coming. They were hungry. He says they were like sheep without a shepherd. I don't know if you've ever had much experience in shepherding. You know, back in the days when I was a shepherd, sheep would often just, you know, look very, you know, wandering around aimless. And I don't really know what I'm talking about because I never was a shepherd. But, you know, sheep without a shepherd, what, you know, they might not be the smartest animals, but they would just kind of be wandering around like lost, wouldn't they? If the shepherd was not nearby, they follow the shepherd. But the shepherd is not around, well, those sheep are just going to be kind of looking around like with a, you know, dazed look on their face. And that's how Jesus saw this crowd. They were in need. They were in want. And Jesus was moved with them. And it's comforting to know that Jesus did have this attitude towards his crowd. I'm comforted by that. That he didn't turn them away. That he didn't come down on them. That he didn't say, guys, enough is enough. Give us a moment here, okay? We just need to take a breather here. Guys, come back the next day. Go into the town, get some food, whatever you need to do. He didn't come down on them. He didn't turn them away. But he received them. He took this role of a shepherd who was tending the flock. Tending the flock. And, you know, that is how pastors need to be today. Pastor is a shepherd of the church. And it's too bad that sometimes pastors find it their duty to come down on the flock. Or to be hard on them. Instead of just having compassion and shepherding them. If you ever see me coming down or not caring, not shepherding, just point me to this verse, will you? Get me back on track. But I pray that that's the attitude that I will have before me. Just shepherding and caring, having compassion, wanting the best for the people that are here. Wanting the best for them and looking for their needs. And Jesus does desire to meet our needs. We see that very clearly here in this passage. He desires to meet our needs. Now, what was their need at the time when they came? What does Jesus say to Philip? He says, "Where shall we buy bread that these may eat?" He recognized right away what their most important need was at the time, was to eat. They were hungry. And Jesus desired to meet that need. There may be times where we want Jesus to go way above and beyond what our specific need might be. "Lord, you know, I'm a little short on the bills here. I need $100. But Lord, you know, why not $1,000? Because if you give me $1,000, oh, I'll be able to do so much more with that. That'd be wonderful." But what happens so often? What do we see? Might see a check come in, $99.99. You know, just enough to meet that specific need that we have. And that's what the Lord wants to do. To meet that specific need that we have. To give us our daily bread. Not to just throw on the heap of blessing and say, "Here, you know, just, you know, this is going to be your year's worth right here. I'm just going to lay it all on you right now for the next year. Just use it wisely." No. He gives us that daily bread, what we need for each day, doesn't he? He desires to meet that need that we have for that day. And that's what he'll do. And he saw their need was to eat. And he comes and desires to minister to that need. So he says to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread that these may eat?" In verse 6, "But this he said to test him, for he himself knew what he would do." Jesus knew already what he would do. And Philip answered him, "200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may have a little." If you're wondering how much 200 denarii is, it was about twice as much as 100 denarii. And it was about 6 to 8 months of wages. 6 to 8 months worth of wages. That's how much 200 denarii was. And Philip said, "Give these guys something to eat, Lord. Give them something to eat." And he pulls out a couple copper coins maybe out of his pocket. Oh my goodness, I'm a little bit short here. 6 months' wages. And Philip was looking at the natural means of trying to provide for these people. It's interesting how Jesus went and turned to Philip. Have you ever thought about that? Why did Jesus turn to Philip and say, "Philip, what are we going to do here?" Now, Philip was from around this area, as we saw in chapter 1. He was from Bethsaida, which was around this area here. Now, Philip would have been maybe the natural man to turn to because of his local knowledge of the area. And he would have begun to think, "Well, okay, let's see here. There's a market down the road there. There's that great, you know, fruit stand by the sea there. Well, I wonder if they're open right now." And Philip would have known the ins and the outs of that area there. But why did Jesus turn to him with that difficult decision? You see, this is what I think it is. Jesus desires to bring us along with him in the work of the kingdom. He desires to bring us along for us to be participators in the work. That's what Jesus wants, doesn't he? He wants us to be involved, to be participating in the work of the kingdom. Now, even though Jesus already had it all worked out of what he was going to do, he had a plan in mind. He wants to challenge us and develop in us that simple faith and trust in him. And I believe he was doing that with Philip here. Though Jesus had a plan already in mind, what was happening in Philip's life? The wheels were beginning to turn. How am I going to do this? What's going to happen? And as Philip sees the outcome, what would have been that reminder saying, "Lord, man, I just need to trust in you. You've got it all worked out. Though you desired to use me in the work, man, I just go ahead and follow you and know that you've got it all worked out. In you, I just need to put my trust and put my faith." But what happens so many times? We look at our own natural resources and think, "How am I going to meet this need here? What am I going to do? Oh my goodness. Oh, how's this going to work out?" And we look to our own resources. We look to our bank account. We look to our own talents maybe and think, "How am I going to work around this situation? What am I going to do?" And we see that with Philip. He didn't do too so well in this test because he was focusing primarily on the impossibility of the problem rather than on the solution, rather than what he can do, rather than looking at Christ and saying, Jesus, what are we to do here? And we can be like that, where we can look at the magnitude of the problem rather than simply looking at the magnitude of our caring Lord. We put our eyes upon our problem, think, look at how big this problem is, rather than seeing how big our Lord is and that He is faithful to take us through that situation, that He is faithful to meet that need. We serve a great God, a caring God, God full of compassion, who desires to minister to us and meet our needs. Instead of looking on our problem and on how we're going to handle it, we need to look to Him and know that, you know, oftentimes He is the only one that can handle it. He's the solution. And we turn to Him, put our eyes upon Him. And so Philip was worried. 200 denarii, 6 months' wages. That's a lot of dough. Man, are we going to be able to get enough money brought together to buy that much food? And then Andrew comes in verse 8. One of his disciples, Andrew, who was Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there is a lad here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 small fish, but what are they among so many? Andrew, what a great guy he is. I like Andrew. Every time we see Andrew in the Word, he is bringing people to Jesus. He's a people person. What a great ministry that is, isn't it? Just leading people to Jesus. Let me show you the man that's changed my life. And Andrew's here just bringing people to Jesus. And so Andrew goes and finds this young man, this young boy, who had, you know, was faithful and brought his lunch with him. Maybe his mom went and packed it for him. He's got this lunch. And maybe this young boy had begun to hear that they were in need of food, that there's this great crowd here. And maybe this young boy stepped forth. Either way, Andrew found this boy and brings him to Jesus. What a great ministry. But even Andrew was a little skeptical on the solution, because he said in verse 9, but what are they among so many? Two fish and 5 loaves of bread. But what are they? Now it's interesting here that the food that comes forth out of all these people, the only bit of food that they're able to find is 2 small fish. It was nothing to write home about. It wasn't 2 king salmon. It wasn't 2 huge tuna, where maybe they'd be able to feed a little bit more with it. It was 2 small fish. Nothing to write home about, was it? And 5 barley loaves. Now, barley loaves were bread that was made with the cheapest grain available. And it was bread that was made, actually, it was more fit for an animal than it was for men. That was the kind of food that they would give to the animals. So it wasn't very good kind of bread. Barley loaves. Nothing to write home about. And 2 small fish. But we are going to see the Lord do a great thing out of something not so great. We're going to see Him do a great thing with something in our eyes that wasn't that great. Now, one thing that always intrigued me with this passage here is the willingness on the part of this young boy to come and bring his food. Isn't that amazing? That always intrigued me. You know, if I were this young boy and I'm sitting in this crowd of 5,000 people and everybody's looking hungry, you know, I would have gone and find myself a nice shaded tree where I could kind of get lost in, you know. I'd have my food all nice and packed in my tunic or, you know, cloak that I had on or something like that. You know, I'd do one of these things, you know, and whip it out, and I'd start chomping down this thing, you know, making sure nobody would see me. Because, you know, I wouldn't want anybody to stumble, of course, or anything like that. But, you know, I would chomp down this food and I would just enjoy it. I think that's in the natural mind. That's what I would do. I would think, come on, you know, 2 small fish, nobody wants to eat barley loaves. And anyways, what good is I going to do among all these people? I might as well just go ahead and enjoy it. You know, not everybody's going to be able to have this. And I would have just chomped down on this stuff. Came out and said, what? You're in need of food? Oh, you know, wipe the crumbs away. Oh, it's too bad, you know. I wish I had some here, but oh well. And you know, this boy comes forth and says, here, here's what I've got. And this young lad gave all that he had to the Lord. He gave all that he had for the sake of the cause. He laid it down. Man, that's incredible that this young boy would do that. It would have been very tempting to just go off and have your own little personal picnic. Yet this boy gave all that he had for the Lord. He gave up his own comfort of a decent meal, that Jesus might in turn feed others. You know, we might feel that we don't have much. Lord, what do I have to offer? What do I have? God, you really can't use what I've got to offer. But you know, when we are faithful to come before the Lord and say, Lord, here's what I have. I give it to you. You know what? He will do wonders with it. He will do a great work with it. We might feel like we don't have a talent in our bones. Nothing to offer. When we come before the Lord with that attitude of just giving Him our all, you know what? He will use that. And He will make it a blessing to others. The Lord wants our lives to be a blessing to others. And we come and just lay down our lives, He will do a great work. And we see that with this young boy here. So, what does Jesus do? He says, make the people sit down, in verse 10. Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down in number about 5,000. It's interesting that Jesus went and had everybody sit down. You see, the things that Jesus does are to be done decently and orderly. If Jesus all of a sudden said, hey guys, got some food for us, man, people probably would have rushed and, food, wow, come up and just gone crazy. You know, it could have been just mayhem there, like one big mosh pit or something at a concert. But Jesus says, hey, have everybody sit down. We're going to distribute this food and it's going to be done decently and in order. And that's the way Jesus desires to work. Now, something else that's significant here is that when Jesus desires to feed His people, He wants us just to be comfortable and to take it all in, to not be in a hurry, to not have that fast food lineup mentality, but to sit down just to take it all in. So many times we can have that fast food mentality, don't we, with the Word. Lord, I got to get to work, but here, you know, let me, okay, let's see, what should I read here today? Okay, great, you know, great, okay. Amen. Wonderful. And we're off. But you know, Jesus wants to do more than that. He wants to speak in our hearts. He wants to teach us from the Word. He wants to minister to us. And He wants us just to take it all in, to sit down, to not be in a rush. And that's what we see here with the crowds, that Jesus was going to do a great work in their lives. He was going to feed them. Don't be in a hurry. But let's just be relaxed and take it in. Now the people that were there, it says in the Word, were 5,000 men. And it's believed that there could have been up to about 15,000 people there, including the women and the children. The only time we see the number 5,000 was in reference to the men that were there. So if you take into consideration others that would have been there in that crowd, we could be looking at feeding 15,000. And our mind could go off on that, but it's incredible. And Jesus took the loaves, and when He had given thanks, He distributed them to the disciples, and the disciples to those sitting down, and likewise of the fish, as much as they wanted. So Jesus went and took this food. What did He do with it, guys? What do we see in verse 11 here? What was the first thing He did with that food? He gave thanks. Thank you. He gave thanks. Incredible. And in Mark, Matthew, and Luke, it says that Jesus looked up into heaven as He gave the thanks and He broke that bread. You know, if I were there once again, two small fish, five loaves of bread, not nice bread, you know, I'd have been sitting there going, God, come on, five loaves, two small fish, Lord, come on, why couldn't You just give us a bit more? Why couldn't You just supply, you know, just a bounty of this food? Then we could, everybody could have enjoyed. Lord, just a little bit more. Why? I could have been complaining. I probably would have been doing that. Oh, great. What's, you know, this isn't much. But Jesus, what does He do? He gives He gives thanks for what he does have. You know, too often we find ourselves complaining over the things that we don't have, rather than being thankful for the things that we do have. I can be like that so often in my life. Lord, if I only had this. Lord, I need this here, and God, that'd be great. Instead of just being thankful for the things that I do have. And when I look over my house and I see the possessions that I have, the things, man, there's enough reason to be thankful for right there. But we get so caught up in things that we don't have. And Jesus looked up in heaven. And that in itself was a reminder of the source of our provision and blessing. He looked up into heaven. God is the source of all good things. And to him we can be thankful for what we do have. Let's give thanks for what we do have. And you know what? When we do, the Lord's going to bless it, isn't he? When we give thanks for what we do have, the Lord's going to bless it. We're not going to be so concerned about that which we don't have. So, takes his food and they distribute it out to the crowds. So when they were filled, he said to his disciples, gather up the fragments that remain so that nothing is lost. Wait a second here. It says in verse 12 that when they all had just a little bit to eat and were sort of satisfied, it says when they were filled. Guys, these guys chowed down. This was like the smorgasbords of all smorgasbords right here. You ever been to a buffet and you just, you know, you can't even think about another item of food because you just feel like you're going to explode. You're sitting down at the table, you got your belt buckle kind of undone, you know, you're like, oh, that was good. And you just can't even think about another piece of food. You're filled. You know what? These guys, out of the small amount that they had, they were filled. What a miracle that was, guys. What an incredible miracle. Not only did they just have a little bit to eat, but they ate and were satisfied, it says in the NIV. They were filled to being satisfied. It's incredible. They stuffed themselves. You know, we talked about this earlier, but whatever we have to offer to him, he will use it, and he will make it go so much further than we could ever imagine. Whatever we have to lay down to him, he will use it and make it go so much further than we could ever have thought. And then it says that each of the disciples gathered up, or it says in verse 13, therefore they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 barley loaves, which were left over by those who had eaten. 12 baskets were left over. Lord, you're just so good. Not only were they filled, but there were 12 baskets left over. Imagine that. Each of the disciples would have had their own basket of food sitting there. And God truly gives in abundance. It was customary for the servants in this day, for the servants of a meal to receive some of the leftovers. Now here's Jesus' servants, the disciples, each getting a basket. And what does Jesus demonstrate for us? He demonstrates that he takes care of those who are following and serving him. He provides for them. He'll take care of them. The disciples going about serving the Lord, laying down their lives for him, just going all out for him, abandoning their former life. They were servants of the Lord, and Jesus is taking care of them, each of them having a basket full of the leftovers. You know, you hear reports and stories of missionaries that just abandon everything, and they go out and they are just serving the Lord. They don't have much, and you think, how are they going to make it? They don't have a lot of income. What's going to happen? How are they going to get by? You know what? The Lord's going to be faithful to provide for them. The Lord takes care of his people, provides for them. And we see that so beautifully here in this passage. Then those men, when they had seen the sign that Jesus did, said, this is truly the prophet who is to come into the world. Now, there are those out there that try to give reasons to this miracle to show that it wasn't really as spectacular as we see here in our passage. Many people give different accounts, some commentaries even. Some people say, you know, what really happened was that the pilgrims that were there making their way probably to Jerusalem, or just those that were in the crowd, you know, probably would have had, you know, a stick of bread with them, and they probably would have just had it sitting up in their sleeve that they were kind of hiding. You know, they didn't want to have to share. And when Jesus had this food from this little boy and he began to give thanks for it, people were kind of convicted and thought, oh man, you know, look at this guy. Well, okay, I'm going to make use of my food. And everybody just began to pull this bread from their clothes, whatever, this food that they had, and they began to partake of this food. And everybody was fed. Some people try to explain it away that way. Some people say that as Jesus broke this food, that really all they had was just a little bit, kind of like what we'd see in our communion here today. They would just had a little crumb of bread. They would have had just a little, you know, piece of the fish. And they would have just taken little morsels of that. And it went through to the whole crowd. But you know what? People that try to explain it away, I don't think that they are really reading their Bible here. Maybe they've written their own passage for this or something. Because we see quite clearly that they were all filled. It wasn't just a small amount that they had. They were all filled. The Lord blessed it. And there were 12 baskets left over. And nor do I believe that people just began to pull out the food that they had already brought with them. As they looked out, Jesus would have been aware of the people there and saw that they were without food. Because as he saw them coming, he said, where are we going to get food for these people to eat? This is just simply one of those great miracles of the Lord. The great signs of Jesus that point us to the realization that he was the Son of God, and is why John writes about this account. And so in verse 14, they saw the signs that he did, and they declared, this is truly the prophet who is to come into the world. Therefore, in verse 15, when Jesus perceived that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, he departed again to the mountain by himself alone. He went and departed by himself alone again. Now this great act that these people witnessed pointed people to the power that God had given to Jesus. And as I said, it's why John went and included this in his book. Since the crowd witnessed the things that they saw, they believed Jesus to be the prophet that was prophesied about or mentioned of in Deuteronomy chapter 18. Verse 15 and 18 says this, the Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your midst, from your brethren. Him you shall hear. And in verse 18, I will raise up for them a prophet like you from among their brethren, and will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak to them all that I command him. The people were awaiting this prophet like Moses. Moses was one who brought the food. God did it, but the people looked at Moses when they were in the wilderness, and the bread from heaven came down, and here Jesus supplying them bread. People were thinking, this is truly the prophet that we've heard prophesied about. This is him. And they thought, this is great. This is wonderful. He's come finally. The kingdom can now be established. This Roman rule can now be thrown off as this yoke of the Roman bondage. It can be wiped away. Oh, we can come and he can set up his kingdom. Let's come and declare him king. Let's begin to help him set up this kingdom. The people were getting excited, getting frantic, because they saw the hope that they had in him. But you see, it was not yet God's time for this to begin to happen. Jesus was here not to set up his kingdom, but he was here to lay down his life. Jesus had come so that he could go to the cross and give us life in his name. And the kingdom that he was desiring to establish was the kingdom in our hearts, the Lord's rule in our hearts. And so the people, they were getting excited. And so Jesus goes and says, hey, he says it to his disciples. Now let's turn back into Mark again, Mark chapter 6. And in Mark 6, we'll pick it up in verse 45. And that says, immediately he made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side, to Bethsaida while he sent the multitude away. And when he had sent them away, he departed to the mountain to pray. Now when evening came, the boat was in the middle of the sea, and he was alone on the land. Then he saw them straining at rowing, for the wind was against them. Now about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea, and would have passed them by. And when they saw him walking on the sea, they supposed it was a ghost and cried out, for they all saw him and were troubled. But immediately he talked with them and said to them, "Be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid." Then he went up into the boat to them, and the wind ceased. And they were greatly amazed in themselves beyond measure and marveled. So we see that immediately Jesus went and had them go in a boat and go across the sea. And Jesus went back towards Capernaum, or the disciples were going back towards Capernaum, while Jesus went to get alone again to pray. Now like that, though Jesus is seeing such great things taking place, he knew that the important thing was taking time to pray. Isn't it funny how we find ourselves praying more maybe when things are not going our way? But when things are just rosy, when things are great, oh, everything just seems to be rolling along, we tend sometimes to skip praying. And praying becomes something that we do when we are in need. But Jesus, though he is at really the height of his ministry, the crowds are excited, Jesus took time to pray. And we see that time and time again in his ministry, that he'd get up early in the morning and go and pray. What a good example it is to us, a good model for us, taking time to pray. The Lord was laying down his life to the Father, wanting to be obedient to his will, wanting to be just strengthened and restored, refreshed by the Father. And that's what we need to do as well. So Jesus went and had his disciples go off. Now, while this is happening, a storm breaks out on the Sea of Galilee. Now, we ask ourselves this question. Why would Jesus go and have his disciples get in this boat and row across the sea in this treacherous situation? Surely Jesus would have known about the storm that was brewing, wouldn't he have? Why would he have his disciples get in the boat and go and face such a difficult situation? Well, a couple things we see. First of all, the disciples, what would their attitude been at this point? I think they would have been pretty pumped, pretty excited. Look at the miracle we just witnessed. Look at the crowds. They're rising up saying, we gotta establish this kingdom. Let's make him king. And the disciples could have been thinking in the back of their mind, Jesus is king. You know, we've been pretty faithful with him and serving him. That could mean some pretty prominent positions for us in that kingdom. You know, being at the right hand of Jesus, ruling in this kingdom. Wow. And they could have begun to have their mind start to race over the possibilities here, thinking, I could get used to that. I like the sounds of that. Jesus is king. This kingdom. Ooh, I've always wanted to live in a castle. Whoa, wouldn't that be nice? And the disciples, you see, could have begun to think along these lines. They've been experiencing great ministry. They've been experiencing the popularity of the crowds. And now this attempt to make Jesus king. But now they find themselves in the middle of a storm. Pretty interesting, isn't it? You see, they were going from a mountaintop experience to being thrust into the valleys of despair. And that is what will happen in our lives so many times. That we will experience these mountaintop experiences. Wow, everything's just going so good. The Lord is great. And I'm just so excited with what's happening. We're seeing great things taking place around us. Oh, it's wonderful. But then also in the next week, we find ourselves right there, boom, in those valleys. And you see, that is what happens to us so many times. Because what happens is that we can easily begin to get excited over external things. And we get our eyes off of Jesus. So what does he do? He sends a storm. He sends a trial. That we begin to get focused on Jesus again. And these disciples, as they're going through the storm, I would bet that they were thinking about anything but this kingdom idea right now. They're thinking, oh Lord, where are you? We need you right now. This is awful. And you see, when we're constantly going through those mountaintop experiences, we can easily get unbalanced. We can become unbalanced. And when we go through trials, it kind of brings grounding to our lives, doesn't it? It grounds us. It brings a balance there that we need. Because going through constant mountaintop experiences, oh, we can just think everything's great, and we just begin to, you know, just depend upon what's happening on our own lives. We get our eyes off of Jesus. And He wants to bring a balance there. And we go through some of those trials sometimes because it gets us back on track. And that's, I believe, what we would be seeing here with these disciples, is getting them back on track. Secondly, we also need to recognize that just because we are following the Lord's will for our lives and being obedient to Him doesn't mean that we're going to have clear sailing. What were the disciples doing? They got in a boat because Jesus went and told them, hey, go over here. They were following what the Lord said for them to do. They were being obedient. They were obeying His will. But yet, the storm still came. And we've got to understand that just because we are obeying His will and being in the Lord's will does not mean we're going to be free from difficulty. It doesn't mean that we're going to have clear sailing the whole way. The same thing happened with the three Hebrew fellows, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, didn't it? They were obeying the Lord. They were not bowing down to the idols, yet they were thrown into the fiery furnace. They were put in the fire because of their obedience to the Lord. But we know what happened there. The Lord was with them, wasn't He? We may go through the storms and the trials of life, but we know and can rest in this, that the Lord will be with us. The Lord will take us through those difficulties that we have. We would prefer, obviously, to avoid that scene altogether, to avoid going through those things. But the Lord will be faithful. Going through trials, it develops maturity in the believer. It develops that maturity and the character that we need as Christians. And James 1 talks about that. It causes us all the more to depend on Jesus. Going through the storms, there is a purpose in that, guys. It balances us. And we see the Lord's faithfulness through it. Even though we're in the will of the Lord, doesn't mean we're going to be free from that. You may have heard this joke. George W. Bush was in an airport lobby, and he noticed a man there in a long flowing white robe with a long flowing white beard and flowing white hair. The man had a staff in one hand and some stone tablets under the other arm. George W. approached the man and inquired, "Aren't you Moses?" The man ignored George W. and stared at the ceiling. George W. positioned himself more directly in the man's view and asked him, "Aren't you Moses?" The man continued to peruse the ceiling. And George W. Bush tugged at the man's sleeve and asked once again, "Come on, you look like, aren't you Moses?" And the man finally responded in an irritated voice, "Yes, I am." And George W. asked why he was so unfriendly. And Moses replied, "The last time I spoke to a bush, I had to spend 40 years in the desert." And Moses went through the same thing, didn't he? Obeying the Lord's will, but knowing that it wasn't always just clear sailing. And guys, we can rest in the example of other people who have gone before us. That obedience to the Lord doesn't mean that everything's going to just be clear, a bed of roses. But we know that the Lord will be with us. And we know that when we're walking in the will of the Lord, it is going to be the best place for our lives. It is going to be the place where we will have the most joy and satisfaction. I'm not trying to discourage you and say, oh, the Lord's will is just going to be awful. You can get beat up all the time. No, that's not what I'm saying. I just want us to be understanding that, hey, we're going to go through those storms. The disciples did. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego did. Moses did. even though they're obeying the command of Jesus. We're going to go through those storms. But it is going to be the best place for us because the Lord will be working in our lives. The Lord will show Himself faithful, and the Lord will take us through. Now we see from this account some very promising things that will help us, as I've already begun to say, some very promising things that are going to help us through the storms and trials of life. First of all, we recognize that Jesus is watching. In Mark there, as he was up on the mountaintop praying, it says that he was watching the disciples as they were fighting with the oars and trying to, you know, go against the waves. Jesus is watching us. He is aware of what we're going through. He's not turning a blind eye to us. He's not too busy to look upon our need with care and compassion. We don't go to the Lord and say, "Lord, I'm going through this difficulty." "Oh, are you? I'm sorry, I was busy off with some other thing. I didn't really see that. You know, that's too bad. Listen, I'll see what I can do here." No, the Lord knows. The Lord knows what we're going through because He cares. He's filled with compassion. He's watching. He was seeing what was happening with the disciples. Secondly, we see that Jesus will come alongside you in those trials. He'll come alongside you. What did He do with the disciples? He said, "Okay, these guys need help." He went out and walked on the water. And He came alongside them. Our three friends in the fiery furnace. What happens? Nebuchadnezzar looks in there. "Wait a second. Didn't we put three guys in there? Well, there's a fourth in there. And he looks like a son of man." Jesus will be with us. He'll be alongside us in the midst of the fire, in the midst of the trials and storms that we go through. He will be with us. We can take comfort in that. Third, we see that He will come and comfort us. The disciples saw Him coming out in the water there and they were freaking out. "Oh my goodness, what is that? It looks like a ghost." Jesus comes and says, "Listen, be of good cheer. Do not be afraid. It is I." Be of good cheer. The Lord wants us to know that we are not alone. That we don't need to fret or fear the things that we go through, because He's with us. And He wants to come and comfort us in the midst of those storms. We don't have to be terrified. We can come and rest in the promise of His Word. When we're going through difficulty, man, open up your Bible. Begin to read it. And let the words of Christ begin to comfort you. Because He desires to speak to us. He desires for us to be of good cheer. To not walk around as these, you know, Christians with these sour faces. "Oh, I'm going through this awful time." No, be of good cheer because He is there and with us and taking us through it. That brings me to my last point. In the midst of that storm, what will He do? He will see us through it. Not only is He watching us, not only is He going to come alongside us, not only is He going to comfort us, but He will see us through it. As He came to the boat, the disciples brought Him in. And what does it say in verse 21? "Then they willingly received Him into the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land where they were going." They suddenly found themselves the place that they were wanting to go. We may feel at times like we're just going nowhere. "Lord, what's this all about? We're just, you know, we're struggling here. We're going nowhere. We're not going to make it to our destination. We're not going to make it to the point that we need to be at." But the Lord comes. And with Jesus on our side, we are indeed going to make it to the place that He has for us. He will guide us and He will help us. He will see us through every storm and trial that we go through. Only let us look to Him. Don't fret over the storms that you go through. Don't think, "Lord, why is this happening to me?" Because the Lord is doing a work in your lives. The Lord is keeping you grounded, balanced, so that your eyes will be fixed upon Him. And the Lord will show Himself faithful in the midst of that storm. Turn with me to Psalm 23. We're going to end with this because this psalm just so goes along with this passage that we've read here this morning. (Clears throat) And as we read through the psalm, we're going to see many ways that this kind of fits into the passage that we've been reading today. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He looked upon them as sheep without a shepherd, and he met their need. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He had the people sit down on the field there, in the grassy knoll. And then as they're out in the water, he was just kind of leading them beside the still water. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his namesake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. He prepared a great table for this crowd, didn't he? Provided the food for them. Met their needs. He was their shepherd. And cared for them. Was filled with compassion towards them. This morning, we're going to go to the Lord's table, and the Lord desires to meet our need this morning, doesn't he? The Lord desires to come and minister to us. And let's just take some time to bow our hearts before the Lord. And just again, let's begin to think about what Jesus has done for our lives and in our lives.